Great. Good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Katrina Thompson. My pronouns are they or them. I have been a member at Prairie for about almost 4 years, and I'm currently serving on the Committee on Ministry. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We strive to be welcoming to all, though we recognize that we all have biases that limit our understanding of how others may perceive us. We stumble in our efforts, but we commit to keep trying to grow our ability to love people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender identity, family structure, age, or abilities. Since we don't have our name tags on, we'd like to invite you to add your pronouns to your name in Zoom. Introducing yourself with your pronouns is a great way to challenge the norm that these should be assumed and to create space for everyone, no matter how they identify. To do this, click on your picture, press the three dots in the upper right corner, and then click on rename to add your pronouns. We have a few announcements. You can see the emailed order of service for additional events, or I also have pasted the order of service in the chat. Note that the order of service is now a link to the weekly news of the week that comes out from our admin, Dan, and it's toward the top part of the email. So you can find it there. We are sharing our offering this quarter with the Tenant Resource Center, which is dedicated to promoting positive relations between rental housing consumers, that is tenants and providers or landlords, by providing information and referrals, education about rental rights and responsibilities, and access to conflict resolution. Reverend Matt Aspen is holding follow-up discussions to last Sunday's service. Please see his email to Prairie News on Monday, from this past Monday, with the dates and times that he'll be available, and email him at minister@uuprairie.org to let him know which session you would like to attend. Our virtual service next week on January 30th is Rediscovered Transcendentalist Carolyn Healy Dahl, by our own Robin Proud. Our opening words this week are The Unbroken by Rashani, and John Gernant will read those for us.
John, you have to mute yourself.
The Unbroken. There is an unbrokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshattered. There is a sorrow beyond the grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose gifts emerge strength. There is a hollow space too vast for voices, through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sounds, whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place inside that is unbreakable and home and whole. Rosh Hashanah.
Thank you, John. Our opening song is called Prairie Raga, and it was composed and will be performed by Jim Glick.
Thank you.
That was really great. It's so cool, even though I hate that we can't see each other in person, we're getting such diverse music lately and getting to see so many different folks. next, we have our chalice lighting, which is Being Peaceful by Thich Nhat Hanh, and it will be read by Suzanne Burnett.
If we are peaceful, if we are happy, we can smile and blossom like a flower, and everyone in our family, our entire society, will benefit from our peace. Thich Nhat Hanh, especially today in honor of a great, great teacher. We light this chalice as a symbol of our gathered community and the divine spark in each of us. Our dog is interfering slightly. I apologize.
Thank you, Suzanne. We will now have a moment of silent meditation. Today's service is titled Befriending Our Wounds, a Meditation by Lisa Glick, who uses she, her pronouns. When Lisa Glick was 23, she learned Buddhist meditation while traveling in India. Since then, mindfulness and meditation have formed the bedrock of her life. She went on to study Buddhism at the University of Wisconsin, as well as at Naropa Institute. She taught in the Madison Public Schools for 33 years and lives with her husband, Jim, who we just heard, on the Near West Side. Their two grown sons live nearby. Today's presentation relates to our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. And as Suzanne mentioned, and probably many of you may have heard in the news, my teacher of many years, Thich Nhat Hanh, passed away on Friday. So I feel like I've lost a parent because he was such a guiding light to me. And when he passed, before he passed, he shared with us that he was not going to name a successor to his lineage. And he told us that all of us as his students are sort of blessed or expected, or I don't know how to put it, to carry on his teachings and what we learned from him. So in all humility, I hope that I can carry a little bit of his spirit with me as I share with you today. I'll do my best, but as a disclaimer, I'm definitely, he's a hard act to follow, and I'm a work in progress, even after practicing diligently for 48 years. I've got a long way to go. So, this morning, I'll start out by talking briefly about meditation and mindfulness in general, and then I will go on to lead us in a guided meditation that is designed to help us heal our internal wounds. So if you don't have any internal wounds, then maybe you tune out, but I think most of us have a few. So it's no secret, no news, that anxiety and depression are running amok in society, in the global community, with concerns about the climate and the destruction of rainforests and racism and so many global disasters that are going on. So there's, not to mention COVID as a minor side note. And the political unrest just in our own country is is concerning. So we add to that the personal problems that we all have, aging, which we can't escape, and illness, and the suffering of our loved ones, the passing of those we love. So there are a lot of things that cause us to feel distress. And mindfulness and meditation invite us to return to the present moment. We've all heard that. But what if the present moment seems unbearable and we don't want to return? It's too scary or too painful. Then we run from our feelings, and we're sort of hardwired. Even amoebas, if you shine a really strong heat lamp on an amoeba, it moves away. So we're hardwired to dislike uncomfortable feelings and want to distract and run away. And of course, needless to say, in our society, there are so many ways for us to run from our uncomfortable feelings. Seems to be an unending stream of Netflix type streaming possibilities, and there's the internet, and there's the email, and there's social media, and then we check our email again, and it's a constant lure to find some way to feel more comfortable. We're not to be blamed. We all fall prey to this, but recognizing it reminds us that it's a good idea to pause and look at what's really going on. That's especially true because there's been a lot of research since magnetic imaging machines have enabled neuropsychologists to look at our brains and what's going on when we're engaged in various things. And one of the most interesting findings from Richie Davidson and other neuropsychologists, but the thing that really stands out for me, is that they have found a distracted mind is an unhappy mind. And I'm going to say that again because it's so crucial and it shines a light on what's going on with all of us these days. A distracted mind is an unhappy mind. And then you think, how many buttons do we push? And I am not beyond the grip of these things, believe me, but I'm trying to notice more often. So, and we're kind of like victims in a way, I suppose you could say, of the entrepreneurs and brilliant people who are studying and kind of hacking us. They know what we're interested in because we clicked on various things. And so they very skillfully bring, I learned a new word called clickbait. And it's like they know what's going to lure us. She seems to be interested in, I don't want to reveal my own. Anyway, whatever we're interested in or we click on regularly, then they are putting in front of us. So our dopamine is then triggered and we are kind of caught in this spiral of rechecking and rechecking. And then you stop and you pause sometimes. After you surf the internet, let's say for an hour, then just pausing and noticing how your body feels, how your mind feels. And generally speaking, from my point of view, it's not very nourishing. We spend this time thinking, hoping that there's going to be something to help us feel better. And yet at the end, it's just everything is on the surface and we have avoided inhabiting our own body and mind. So true nourishment, as Thich Nhat Hanh so often reminded us, comes from dwelling mindfully in the present moment. And everybody's heard that because mindfulness has become so popular, but how many of us have really tried diligently to practice this during our daily life? A lot of people will say, oh, I tried that, it doesn't work for me, or, you know, I'm just not cut out that way. But sometimes it may be that we haven't sampled or tasted it deeply enough. And often it seems that we have to be in a lot of pain before we really tune into the practices of meditation and mindfulness. Otherwise, we just go on with our habit energies, and we can go on, I guess you'd say, in mild desperation or mildly unhappy until we get really unhappy. And then we're forced to look beneath the surface. And when we look beneath the surface, we can start to learn. So that's the way that suffering can actually be a blessing, because it forces us to stop and look to see what's really going on. Mindfulness is the first step in practicing, certainly from a Buddhist point of view anyway. We stop and we calm ourselves, but then we are invited to look deeply into what's going on within so that we can gain some understanding and start to find a way toward more freedom. So really, Buddhism isn't exactly a religion in the traditional sense. It's more a method of training our minds. And we want to incline our minds more in the direction of wholesome thoughts because they feel better in our body and mind, and away from the less wholesome things. For instance, we might switch from, we might be angry with somebody and we're judging them. And then when we stop and reflect, we realize that judgment, how does it feel in our body? It's unpleasant. And we can actually incline our minds more in the direction of compassion to understand the person who might have offended us and see things from their point of view. So after calming ourselves with mindfulness, then we look deeply and we look into the roots of our suffering. When I returned from India in 1974, I was so excited about mindfulness and meditation. It really, for the first time in my life, I felt like I had touched the earth and found my center. But I came back and there were no, back then it was, you know, 48 years ago, there were no meditation or Buddhist centers in Madison. So I did study, found Geshe Sofa, who's a Tibetan teacher, wonderful man, and studied with him. But I'm just saying this because it's amazing in the last 50 years, really, that our society has been very much transformed by the teachings of the East. And I noticed there's a program coming up on transcendentalism. I think Robin Proud is going to lead that. And it's very much in keeping with this kind of exploration. So secular mindfulness and meditation is popular everywhere now. Even Harvard, which you think of in the olden days as kind of the bedrock of stability and conservatism, they are espousing the practice of meditation and mindfulness. So why did this happen? Why did we have this enormous cultural shift in just 50 years? It's because in the East, they were working on mapping the internal conditions of our mind and body, whereas in the West, we were focused more on technology, getting to the moon, developing computers and everything. So it's a nice cultural exchange for us to learn some of the things that they were focusing on more in the East. And we need, because of all the distractions and the confusion of modern life, we need a way to calm down and tame our unruly minds, because we've never been taught how to do that as we were growing up. So mindfulness is very easy to fit into our daily lives. And I'm sure if I ask for a raise of hand, but I don't want to embarrass people, but I'm sure many people here practice mindfulness and have a meditation practice. You don't need to spend any time to start practicing mindfulness. It just takes slowing down just a half step so that you can inhabit your own body. And often I find myself, and I'm sure I'm not alone, rushing from one thing to the next. We're doing the dishes. We want to get done with doing the dishes so we can get on to the next thing, which might be even writing something or reading something. But then there's this little sense of impatience that we need to get onto the thing that we really need to do. And so we can spend our whole lives in this forward momentum, reaching for a future that never actually arrives. And I've heard it said that why are we rushing so much? Are we rushing so anxious to get to our own funeral? Because in the end, if we keep rushing, the only time we stop is at the end. So it might be a good idea to stop a little earlier. Thich Nhat Hanh teaches the phrase, "This is it." So whatever you're doing, you stop and think, there's nothing that's going to be better than this. This, if I'm doing the dishes, I'm feeling the heft of the bowl or the plate, and I'm smelling or sensing the fragrance of the dish detergent. And if I'm folding clothes, I'm feeling the smoothness as I lay the clothes out. I don't have to hurry. And that's a gift we can always give ourselves. Now, formal meditation takes a little more of a commitment because we have a to-do list, at least most of us. So if we're going to sit down on the cushion, how can we prioritize that when the garage needs organizing, the windows need washing? You haven't called Aunt Margaret in a long time. And, you know, there's always that to-do list. And you think, well, if I sit for 40 minutes or even 20 minutes, isn't that a waste of time? I'm not getting anything done. So we have to almost stop and prioritize what's more important than the peace in our own body and mind. So I'll say that. I sit for an hour every morning, more or less, but and the reason I do that is it's the most wonderful. I mean, I'm not going to rhapsodize here, and I don't have time to talk about it much, but I will honestly say that it's the most peaceful and wonderful thing that I do all day, that gives me a feeling of aspiration, as well as a feeling of touching the earth and settling and feeling more loving. And so that's just that sounds like an advertisement or something, but I do think it's made my life possible through the ups and downs over the years. Now that I've talked about all of that, I am going to, as promised in the teaser for my talk, I'm going to lead us in a guided meditation. And the meditation is designed to help us get in touch with the parts of us that we're running away from often. So let's be courageous together and we'll begin. This meditation I have taken from Tara Brach, who some of you may know of, is a meditation teacher from the Washington, D.C. We're going to use the acronym RAIN to guide us. The R stands for recognize, the A for allow, the I for investigate, and the N for nurture. So I invite you to begin by getting comfortable, but sitting up straight in your chair and closing your eyes, if you like, with your feet flat on the floor. Pay attention to the movement of the breath and sense the possibility of relaxing with the breath. You might sense the in-breath like a balloon that's inflating, just filling yourself, receiving the breath of life. And each out-breath is a releasing or a letting go. As you breathe, you might sense that there are areas in your body that are wanting to let go, areas of tension that can naturally release right now to some degree. Perhaps letting go in the shoulders, softening in the hands, relaxing in the belly, relaxing the heart, and continuing to relax with the movement of the breath. The mind drifts with thoughts, and you notice that without following them. That's the nature of our minds. Let the thoughts go and just relax open. Let your senses be awake. Listen. Listen to the subtle sounds in the background. Feel yourself sitting on your chair, resting again with the breath. It's from this wakeful presence that you can scan your life now and sense if there's a place of difficulty that's bringing up challenging emotions. Maybe an injury or an illness, something going on in a relationship, conflict, an addictive behavior, something going on at work that's triggering feelings of fear or hurt or shame, sadness, anxiety, bring to mind a situation that in some way brings up reactive emotion that you'd like to find more balance in the midst of. For this exercise, it won't serve well to bring up a situation that evokes too much trauma. That would best be done with a close friend or a therapist. So now, pick something where there's a charged reaction, but not something that feels overwhelming. And let yourself bring to mind a situation that really exemplifies where this gets triggered. It might be a situation with somebody else where you're seeing what their face looks like and the words they're speaking at the moment when you get triggered. Or it might be a situation where you're alone, but in some way behaving in an addictive way that is upsetting to you. Sensing the room you're in. But like watching a movie, go to the frame where you feel most emotionally reactive. Allow yourself to freeze the frame and sense what's triggering you. And we begin rain. The R of rain is to recognize. By recognizing whatever is most predominant that's going on inside you. It might be you're feeling anger or hurt, or you're totally frozen with some sort of stuck intention. Unable to do anything, filled with anxiety. Just naming to yourself whatever it is that you're most aware of. And recognize goes with allow, the A of rain, which is just to let it be there right now. With allow, we pause and make space for whatever's here. Allow doesn't mean you like it. It means that you're acknowledging that this is the life of the moment. You're letting it be there. By allowing, you're able to then begin to deepen your attention. The eye of rain is investigate. You might begin by asking, what most wants attention? What's the most difficult part of this? With investigate, you're feeling into your body, feeling the place of failure or shame or judgment or dislike or fear. It can sometimes help to ask yourself, what am I believing when this is happening? And Am I believing that somebody feels I'm not special? Do I feel or believe that I'm not understood? That I'm invisible? That I'm a failure? That I'm unlovable? Sense, if there's a belief going on, do I believe I'm disrespected? But most importantly, come into the body and sense how whatever you're believing is felt in the body. Pay attention to your throat, your shoulders, your heart, your belly. What emotion might be there? And what is the felt sense? Is there a feeling of clench or rawness, aching or squeeze? You can investigate more fully if you assume the facial expression of what you're feeling. Don't be inhibited now. We all have our eyes closed, no peeking. Go ahead and just let your face take on the expression of whatever's really being triggered in you. And you can change your body posture as well. Maybe you'll raise or hunch your shoulders. Maybe your hands want to come into fists. Sometimes we feel like curling up in a fetal position, but that won't work here. Whatever it is, you're allowing your body and face to express what's going on inside you. That's the part of investigating and fully contacting the experience that we often try to avoid. What do you notice, and where do you feel most vulnerable? And if that vulnerable place in you could communicate, what would it want you to know? Investigation begins to move toward the N of RAIN, nurturing. When you ask that vulnerable place, how do you want me to be with you? You might ask, what does this place most need right now? Does it want to trust something? To feel something in particular, to know something. Asking, investigating, and beginning to sense now the possibility of responding to this place inside you from the most loving and wise part of you. And as a way of getting in touch with that, you might take a few full breaths and maybe find yourself adjusting your posture a little. Now we can assume the facial expression that most allows you to inhabit your highest self. But staying in contact with the vulnerability, listening, feeling, what does this place most need calling on your wisdom and love now. Sense that you can nurture this vulnerability by offering what's needed. You might begin by sensing where it lives in your body and gently bringing a hand to perhaps your heart. Sometimes Thich Nhat Hanh told us to put our arms around ourselves, to hold ourselves as if we were a child and the wisdom part of ourselves was healing us and supporting us. Let the energy start flowing into your place of vulnerability. That's the beginning of a radical shift where we start to regard with compassion our inner life. What words or message does this part need to hear? And can you offer that? It might be something as simple as, I'm sorry, and I love you. Or, I care about the suffering. I'm not going to rush off into other distractions. I'm not leaving. You belong, and you're a part of this life. If you find it difficult to offer compassion from your own higher self, you might invoke or invite some being that represents compassion and love to you. Just call on that being. Maybe it was a beloved grandmother. It could be a person, a teacher, a healer that you know, someone living or dead, a relative or a child. It could be the Buddha or Jesus or the Great Mother. Whatever your symbol of wisdom and inspiration is. And let that love and wisdom that fills this universe, let it flow through your hands into your heart. Flowing into your heart where the vulnerability lies. Rumi says, don't turn away. Keep your gaze on the bandaged place. That's where the light enters you. Explore what it means to really let in love, let in healing, being the holder and the held. Now sensing the heart space that's here and trusting this is more the truth of who you are than any story you could ever tell about yourself. Trusting in and resting in the true presence that is your true home. So that's kind of the end of the, you can open your eyes and re-enter the common world that we all share. And I hope that was a little bit helpful because it's been helpful to me. And that's why I chose this particular meditation because I've been using a lot to work with my own difficult feelings. So thanks for listening.
Thank you, Lisa. We now have some time for discussion. Please raise your hand virtually on using the reaction buttons or kind of raise your hand and wave at me. And then after I call on you, you will need to unmute to speak.
I just want to say something.
I see Andy has his hand raised.
Okay. I guess I have two things. The first thing is a statement, and the second thing is a question for the community as a whole. I think this program came in at a very good time for me. I've been thinking about it. So I really appreciate the speaker and the service. The second thing I'm wondering if the ability to meditate is a privileged thing, whether people who are starving or have difficulty with fear of being killed or shelter, if they're really able to meditate. I'm sure, a minister or something, very high up intellectually, but just the common person. And that's it.
Lisa, do you want to respond?
Sure. The idea is that since we can't transport ourselves into the situation of the people who are suffering severely, the best way we'll know how to do the next thing is to come into our bodies and become solid. And when we become grounded and solid, then we'll know how to help. And Thich Nhat Hanh was a really good example of that, because he addressed out of his own deep practice. He had so much courage. And as he told it, the courage came from finding his deepest nature. And then he traveled all over the world, helping with refugees and giving nourishment and support to people in villages that were very poor. So politically, he connected with congressional leaders. And so he could not have done any of that unless he was grounded and nourished within his own being. So does that answer your question, Andy?
I guess yes, and I guess no. And I'm sorry I wasn't loud enough. I'm trying to get a little closer to my computer. If I can summarize what you were saying, it seems like you were saying once we ourselves are in a good spot, then we can go out and help others who are, really in need. Is that kind of what you were saying?
Yes. And we're...
So then it
if
seems
we like- don't wait until we ourselves are at peace, then we only bring more confusion to the world.
So the people aren't able to meditate on their own. We'll need to go out there and help them. And after we help them, then they may be able to have mindful sessions or meditate.
Right. And if we behave ourselves, if we behave ourselves well, then they might be inspired to want to look into the practice. But it's not so much that we proselytize about it. It's more that we, as Thich Nhat Hanh said, my message is my life. So not so much wanting to convince somebody to practice, but being the best we can.
Thank you. We're running a little bit behind, so I think we have time for just one more question, and I see Rachel and Martin have their hand up.
I just wanted to respond to Andy's question. I actually went to a talk by a psychiatrist who talked about traveling to places in the world where there had been intense trauma, places of civil war, Darfur, for example, and teaching people a very simple breathing meditation and focusing on their breathing that was easy to teach, and that they could teach people to be teachers, to teach other people, and how much improvement they saw in just overall mental health from something that was pretty simple. So it doesn't seem that this is necessarily something that only privileged people can practice, and that mindfulness is of tremendous benefit to people who've been really seriously traumatized as well.
Thank you, Rachel. So we're going to move on to our closing words, which are "The Guest House" by Rumi, and Suzanne Gurnett will read that for us.
This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. This dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.
Thank you, Suzanne. I love that poem. Finally, we have our closing music, which is "Brother Warrior" by Kate Wolf, and it will be performed by Jim and Lisa Glick. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. We are now going to stop the recording, and then we will move into joys and concerns, as well as welcoming visitors.